What we're going to do now is discuss something, a new part of astrology. And every time we do that, we backtrack and look at what we've looked at before. And now, because we have a better feel of things from having looked at the signs and a very little bit at the houses, when we backtrack, it will be more understandable. The background that we have is now important to us, because astrology, as we're looking at it, represents the spiritual worlds. And the spiritual worlds have the unity of the universal spirit. And that unity of the universal spirit pervades everything. So there isn't anything in the creation that isn't some kind of reflection of the one common source. And the way this is said is that everything is in everything. That if you know an atom, you know a galaxy. It's that kind of an idea. Everything is microcosmically and macrocosmically interconnected. So that if you know one thing, you know other things. Now, at first, what we've been doing has been kind of chaotic, because we had to break into a whole different way of thinking and trying to use our intuition and think in terms of spiritual ideas. But once we've made that breakthrough, everything becomes easier. So let's go right back and look at all of the basic elements all over again. I think maybe I ought to go to a radio mic. I don't like the idea. We didn't begin discussing constellations until last time. From our point of view on Earth, with our dimensions, the constellations represent relatively permanent divine expressions, like part of nature, but in a very permanent sense. Patterns don't change except over thousands of years. So what they represent, even in the outer world, they represent emanations of divine light. And they all have some kind of eternal meaning. And they are something that, they're something like unchanging truths. And we have what we, again, what we talked about last time, the signs. The signs, as we've been saying all along, are fields of attitudes. They represent flavors. They represent psychological qualities. In some ways, they are like archetypal ideas. But they are closer to us than the absolute truths that are in constellations. They're artificial in that they are invisible. Constellations have power both visibly and invisibly, but the signs, the effect of them is always invisible. Just like seeing the source of a person is always invisible, unless you're highly clairvoyant. So they represent the living concepts that we are working out and through which we express our spiritual character. We have houses. Sometimes they're called mundane houses. In the same way that signs represent fields of attitude, houses represent fields of opportunity. And since the houses are drawn relative to the birthplace, they're associated with the earth. And they represent the opportunities that we have right here on earth to do the things that we do every day, like making money or building things or things of that nature. So they represent the structure and form of mundane experience. They represent the means to approach the outer world, to do things in the outer world. And in a way, they represent molds. Molds for us to pour spiritual character into. And that is the most important part. We have to have form. The spiritual worlds, relatively speaking, are nebulous and formless compared to the things of the material world. And it is the forms that are represented by the houses that allow the spirit to take expression in this world. Now, the thing that we're looking into now is the planets. And planets are more distinct. They represent foci. They're not foci that just stand in one place as a constant like the stars and the constellations. They are dynamic foci. They are like moving lenses. And what they do is they focus the energy from the signs into the forms of the houses. So they are the beings that manifest things or bring the spiritual quality of the signs into the mundane and material opportunities of the material world. Classically, the planets are called wanderers because they wander all over the heavens. In fact, there are quite a few myths, if you look at them in every culture, about the gods wandering among men. And those kinds of myths usually give you insights into the characters of planets. In Greek mythology, for example, it was usually Zeus and Hermes that went wandering together. So the planets represent crystallizing beings. They crystallize the qualities of the spirit into the world. They are also activators. They are catalyzers. They are precipitators. Now, astrologically speaking, what the planets represent are human qualities. We have to be very careful about what we mean when we say human qualities. Most people think that the human being is this visible form. But that is our physical or biological nature. But on the other hand, our true nature, our true being, is as a spiritual being. We are the beings that know the truth. We are the beings that do the creation. We are the beings that are behind all of the changes that take place in our lives. And the planets are like that. They have a foot in both worlds. They have spiritual character, but they have definite foci in the material world. What was that? It means a focusing agent. Foci is the plural of focus. I suppose in modern English they say focuses, but my tongue doesn't like that so much. And I guess you might call me old-fashioned for my genus. Of that order. So they have a foot in both worlds. They're partially spiritual like humans, and they're partially formal like humans. And as we go on into the examples, we're going to see a lot of that. In fact, we're going to take special note of that each time. Now, even though each of the planets represents a human-like state, it's not a human being as we are a human being. We are general. We have the whole zodiac in us. We have all the houses in us. We have everything in us. The planets do, but when they function as planets, they are specialists. Each one is an epitome of some particular type of quality. And each one of the planets is like an organ of consciousness within the general consciousness of the deity of our solar system. So, you might say, Mercury is like the organ of concrete thinking. Mercury is a specialist in thinking. It may not be very brave, or it may not always have a lot of artistic talent like Mars or Venus, but it epitomizes the ability to think and to think clearly. Finally, the last thing, which we will get at toward the very end of everything, are the aspects. I respect them because this is hidden from the camera. Oh, no, it isn't. It just makes it. And the aspects represent the modes of activity. That is, when the planets are doing things, they have modes and ways of doing things, and those ways of doing things are what the planets represent. They are means to accomplishment. So the aspects represent tools and talents and techniques and methods and all of those kinds of things. Now, when we talk about planets, we get into one of the more unpleasant things about astrology, and that is that astrologers use the word planet to mean something different than the way that word is used in the general English language. And this is unfortunate because all of the things we call planets that aren't what astronomers call planets make us look like ignorant know-nothings. Moreover, it is confusing for some people to call the sun or the moon a planet. Probably the best term that you can learn to use is astrological significator. That represents something definite and that signifies particular astrological qualities. It's a difficult matter because these things do focus, and they all focus in a similar way. The planets that are planets in terms of astronomy are such because they have a given nature. They are satellites that have given characteristics of how they're built and how they're made and how the universe created them. But what astrologers call planets, you know, they function, they focus like planets, but they don't have that same dignity of being that a planet really has. Now, Shard will do me a great favor and pick the tables out of the tray of the printer, because I'm hooked up here and I don't want to unhook it. That usually means disaster. There's a handout. There's about a dozen of them. I was optimistic. I knew there were going to be a few people, but I thought, well, if I print more and more, we'll come. It's like a field of dreams outlook on things. In astrology, the term planets includes the luminaries. And that is the sun. Can I just pass them up? No, not that. The first thing is something in Spanish. No, that's not. Yes, those. The sun and the moon. Even though the moon is only a local satellite, it does, because of its being close to us and actually almost being part of us, has very high astrological significance. In fact, if you work with a horoscope and work only with the sun and moon, you can tell quite a bit that way. And there have been astrologers who have had very successful careers doing that. Then we have the true astronomical planets. And they include Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. We don't do a lot with the Earth because we're using geocentric astrology. Another thing that some astrologers use are asteroids. You won't find me doing much of that because the significance is, the significance is minimal. And there are captured bodies. Such as Chiron. No, it's not an asteroid. It's a captured comet or something like that. Its orbit isn't in the asteroid. And what else do we have? We have major satellites beside our moon. And there are some people that actually... How it's built? No, yeah. I'm a terrible spreader. E-L-L? Okay. Yes. Such some people even use the four satellites of the moon. And there are pseudo things. There are pseudo satellites. Such as things like moons that may or may not exist. I tend to think they don't exist. They're called Lulu and Lilith. People who study the Old Testament and various Kabbalistic books find that there are such things called Lulu and Lilith, and they think there must be something in the heavens like that. And then there are pseudo-planets. They come from a very special kind of astrology called Uranian astrology. Sometimes it's called Hamburg astrology, and sometimes it's called Witte astrology. And Witte was a man who was in the First World War, and he spent his time in the trenches. And these rockets would come over, buzz bombs, I believe they called them, or something like that. And he tried to use astrology to predict them. He somehow got war fever, and he was able to predict them, but they didn't always relate to the planets. And so he assumed that there must be other planets out there. And he got so that he could predict these things using these other planets, which may or may not exist, and he could predict quite accurately. And so he started giving, he even made an ephemeris for these other planets, and he gave them names, and he gave them qualities and everything else. And if you tell a Uranian astrologer that he's dealing with nonsense, they'll get furiously angry with you because they're absolutely sure of all of this. And then Neptune was discovered about 10 years after the First World War, and he said, "See, I told you," but Pluto was discovered. He said, "I told you that there were planets out there beyond Neptune. I told you all along." Unfortunately, Pluto was not one of their planets. And we know the physics of the solar system pretty well. And we can tell what perturbates what. And we've got huge telescopes out there, and we can point them out there to the points where the pseudo-planets are, and somehow we never seem to find any of those out there. I tend to think that there may be harmonics between other things. I don't think they're crazy. So I call them dynamic harmonics. And then there are things that, when you're out in the desert, that you do. There are... Arabian parts and points. the astrology flourished in the Arabic Empire during the time of the Dark Ages in Christendom, and especially in Iraq and in North Africa. They did a lot of astrology. And it took a lot of time, and what they did is they made formulae by putting together a lot of different astrological significators, and from them they could determine certain qualities or certain things, you know, like in health, they had Heilig points. And if a planet was Heilig, it meant almost certainly that it was going to be in ill health. They did a lot of that. And they came out with a whole series of them, which actually work. However, modern astrologers not taking the time to really think about things and ponder and go into the meanings of things have made up their own parts and points. they have the part of Gina's romance or something like that, and it has absolutely no sustaining evidence or such a something like that. And then finally, there are mathematical points. Meaning to say that the midpoint between any two planets is a sensitive area. It doesn't mean that it has a character the way the other astrological elements do, but it is a sensitive area. And there are other points that are like that. And then finally, there are nodes. Oh, if I go over there, it's too far away from the camera. Nodes are where the planets cross the ecliptic going north and south. And there's been some excellent research that substantiates node study very well. Now, all of these things are things that are used by some kinds of astrologers, some more than others. We're going to use only the most simple things. We're going to use the luminaries and the astronomical planets. In all of my life of dealing with people and their problems, it seems to have been adequate to deal with the most important parts of people's lives, things that they have to deal with every day. We won't claim that those other things don't work, but that would be foolish, because a lot of people have put a lot of effort in and they have condense their observations in some kind of a mathematical form. And I wouldn't even advise against studying all of those things. If you've got a lot of time and nothing else to do with it, you might just as well study all of those kinds of things. Yes? Yes. Yes. One that the most common part that is used, the radiant part, is called the part of fortune. And almost every astrologer in the world uses that because it represents someone's ability to make something manifest. And that's taken directly from this kind of astrology, yes. The only thing is that what is most important in astrology is relative significance. There are a lot of things that influence us. It's important to understand what things influence us a lot. You know, like if you have one thought maybe three times in your life, and it's just an ephemeral passing fancy, to spend hours and hours of astrological work picking out those three thoughts in one life, while the person might at the same time have a huge tendency to depression every day of their life, is kind of absurd. So what you want to do is get a grasp of astrology where you have an understanding of the relative significance of things. So we'll cover only the Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. Now, there may be yet undiscovered planets, and there are the questions of these new bodies that they're finding way out at the edge of the solar system. Are they planets or are they not planets? And so this is something that has to be considered. Mystics of all ages have claimed that there are 12 planets that relate to the 12 signs of the zodiac, each one of them different. Even back in ancient India, they had a 12-planet system. I can't speak about that because I don't know. I tried to look into that, but I don't have the capacity to do that. I guess that's enough of talking about the introduction. Now let's start looking at things. The first planet, and for all of the rest of the night, is we're going to talk about the sun. Next week, we're going to do something we very rarely do. We're going to do a double header next week. We'll talk about Venus first, and then we'll have a break to reload the electronic equipment, and then we'll do a separate talk on Mercury. And we'll do two planets in one night, because otherwise we won't get done by the end of the year, and we may have to do that on a later day. The things that we want to look at, we'll use a regular format, just like we did with each of the signs. And the first thing that we look at when we look at any planet is, what is it a personification of? And what the sun is the personification of is of great importance. It is the personification of the center of all things. It represents a state of being around which everything else rotates. Everything has its center. And it's in the center that is a very important center. It is the center of basic being. The sun is basically light. Yes, it is a plasma, and it has all of those qualities, but basically it's pure energy. There's nothing solidified in it as there is in every one of the other bodies that we talk about, planets and asteroids and things like that. So the sun is an epitome just as everything else is an epitome. But the sun is an epitome of central light. And it represents a light of consciousness within which everything else functions. This is one of the reasons why most people relate to astrology in the way that they do. Because they take only that central thing which they can relate to and where it is in the signs, and then they have that for itself. So if each planet is an epitome, that is one thing by itself all alone, the sun is an epitome of enlightenment. But even more than that, it is an epitome of self. When you see the word sun, it's almost important to rivet in your consciousness the word self or ego. Because that is one of the difficulties in working with the sun. The sun is the focus between these outer worlds and the inner worlds, which are pure light. And therefore, the sun has two natures. One part of it is spiritual light. And the other part of it is being the center of things and being the luminary of all things here in this material world. So in the high sense, any time that you look at the sun, you can say self with a capital S. But it is equally valid to say ego with a small e. Everybody's interested in himself. And that's another reason why sun sign astrology is so popular. People want to be self-centered. They want to look at the center of their being, and that's what's most important. Now, compared to everything else in the heavens, the sun is obviously the most obvious. When the sun is out, you can't see anything else. Only sometimes, in some phases of the moon, you can see the moon. But when the sun is there, it's the center of everything. Therefore, it's safe to say, and you'll find out that it works, that the sun in the horoscope represents the most obvious things in life. If you're always going to be somewhat successful if you pick up any horoscope and speak only to the sun, because that is something that people can relate to, because they've looked at themselves in self-consciousness, and that it represents the most obvious part of their being. The sun represents light and heat. And light is the light of consciousness. And without that light, as things exist now in the astronomical being of things, nothing can exist without it. If one looks at the horoscope, which is itself a sun, if you look at it, if this is a representation of a horoscope, you've got that center and the circle. Everything is contained within the sun. Everything is contained within the solar system, just like everything is contained within the symbol of it. Now, if a person is more introverted, then the inner characteristics of the sun are more likely to be what the person relates to. Children are very much introverted. When I was a little child, I didn't even believe that what was in the mirror was me. And I didn't believe that what was in photographs was me. I talked to myself. And when I talked to myself, in my consciousness, that self that I was talking to had nothing to do with that thing in the mirror or that thing in the photograph. That's pretty much the way the sun is. If a person is extroverted, they're more likely to see self in other things that are illumined by their presence. Like I'm the life of the party, or when I'm around, people spark up. So we're talking about a light that is not just a passive light. We're talking about a life that is a light that is a light of knowing, a light of intelligence and wisdom. It's not necessarily thinking, it's just a pure knowing and intelligence. And it is a light of illumination. We're not talking about a passive receptivity to light, we're talking about creative expression. The sun is hot, and heat is a result of the sacrifice to friction, of the friction. And when you sacrifice your own being in friction, that heat represents something like what we call love. We're speaking in a very symbolic way. What do we know about the sun? It gives. Now the opportunities to give, we said, were indicated by the fifth house. But the internal propensity to give is indicated by the sun. If a person has a greatly inhibited sun, giving becomes a very difficult matter. Either that or it becomes a compulsive matter. But a person has to give. Now, because of all of this wisdom, and because everything exists because of it, there is a very protective, a very fostering, parental nature about the sun. So it is not surprising that the sun represents the father in part. The sun and Saturn both represent fatherhood, but we'll talk about Saturn later. It is a parent that is demanding, that is watching, and that is encouraging and enthusiasm. And if anything, it is exemplary. It's a living example. It gives life itself. It vitalizes its things. In fact, by looking at the sun in the horoscope, one can determine the basic vitality of someone. Now, if this parenting quality is taken too seriously, and it's taken too seriously, and there is the great intensity that is the sun, you have some pretty tough things to deal with. You have to deal with things like authoritarianism, a very commanding nature, something that is tyrannical, and something that is forceful. And those are some of the negative signs of what can come out of the psychology of the sun. By now, since we've been looking at two different sides of things, you can see that the sun is paradoxical, both egoistic and self-centered, but self-centered without something, without inhibition that is egoistic. So it is both creative and it is seeing. It is both sacrificing and it is demanding. And there is no formula that can tell you which it's going to be. The only way you can really do anything with astrology is with intuition. After a while, after looking at many, many horoscopes, you get a sense of what something means, but still you're better off if you rely in each and every occasion that you look at a horoscope, if you rely on intuition. Now the sun represents power, not energy. It does, on one level, indicate vitality, but it is not energy, and it is not potential. Energy and potential are found with other planets. So that what the sun represents is manifest power, and it has its power by continually manifesting it. It's not something that's held in reserve, and it's not something that gets played out. Potential, power as potential, is held in reserve, and power as energy is what gets played out. This is just a constant presence of power. Therefore, if you look at the sun, you see the will to power. How willing someone is to do something or to express will is indicated by the sun. What we're trying to say here is not only that the planets are foci, but the planets are to be used for focus. When you look at a horoscope, especially when you look at the planets, you focus on them and you tune in on them, and then your intuition comes to life. And this is the real value of planets. They're definite. They're something that you can put your consciousness on. The signs are so big and so universal and so unlimited in their spiritual qualities, they are universal ideas, that you can't hang your coat on them. But with the planets, you can, because you have something extremely definite and something that is very, very clear-cut. All right, so we've looked a little bit at the will to power. Obviously, when one expresses power, the kingliness quality of the sun comes out, which is even more than paternity. There is something grand and something noble and something divine about it. The sun is one of the foci of divinity. But that divinity, whether it is in ego or sometimes even in spirit, is a tendency to demonstrate. The sun is demonstrative, but it is also showy. It's a sign, it is the focus of something that likes to shine, that likes to show out. On one hand, it is extremely reliable. We depend on the sun for its reliability. And in that regard, the sun is like the sign which rules it, Leo. It is very, very loyal. Things of the sun are likely to be constant throughout life. It's the center of importance. It's the center of existence. It's the center of self-esteem. Therefore, the sun represents things in a horoscope that are of vital importance. And that centrality is often indicated by the sun meaning the central, most important thing in life. Not in all cases, but its central purpose usually. So, for better or worse, it can be either self-importance and egoism, or shining out with divinity as well as a person can do that. As we said, everything rotates around it. So a strong sense of self is necessary. If you find someone that has a weak sun, it means someone that has not that sense of strength to hold things together. The psychologist, especially Carl Jung, can tell you that if a person does not have a strong sense of self that can hold everything else in its place, the whole character breaks down. It is what is called psychological fractionation. It's like they crack petroleum and break it into kerosene and gasoline and all of those things. It's a cracking process. And a person who has extremely low self-esteem is a person who's likely to multiple personalities. And in those multiple personalities, each of the planets is somewhat autonomous. It has it expresses its own character. Let's look at the symbol of the sun. Now, in classical spiritual symbolism or mystical symbolism, the sun is composed of one of the most basic of all spiritual elements, two of them actually, the point and the circle. But in actuality, they're both circles. It's just that one has a radius that is approaching zero. And the other has an indefinite radius. In fact, in mystical consciousness, the sun, as it represents the universal spirit, was described, I'm not sure, I think by Pascal, but I think it goes way back in history before him. It is the circle that has its center everywhere and its circumference nowhere. The spirit is boundless, timeless, without beginning and end, just as a circle is without beginning and end. So this is the divine golden egg. The sun is more than the dot we see in the heavens. It is the entire lit up solar system, because that is its light before it gets attenuated by going into interstellar space. If we take the visible, you can't look at the sun because you'll blind yourself. So this is very much what the spirit is like. There is an intense focus at that center of the whole solar system that is so strong that it is overwhelming. Now, of course, they're talking about the material light when they say that you'll blind yourself. You can look at the sun spiritually, and when you look at the sun spiritually, you get stronger. Some people confuse the two and go blind in trying to do it. Sure, I've seen those people that have looked all day for day on end, and they've blinded themselves looking at the sun. But when you're talking about intelligible light that is understood by the spirit, that is what the inner side of the sun represents. So the symbol of the sun is a visible focus. But it is situated. It is situated by that point in the center. That point in the center which the Pythagoreans would have called being in position, or locus of being. So symbolically then, the symbol of the sun is like a lens. It's like a central focusing agent. And if you could see the whole sun, which you could from a way out in space, it would look like a great big crystal ball of light with a very intense center in it. Some of these things are troublesome because the stuff of psychology and character development, if one is very strong and one is very organized in something, it takes on an autonomous character. The stronger that the sun is in a horoscope, the more one must be careful to place that sun, that self-consciousness or ego consciousness that is represented by the sun, it must be seen relative to things that are much, much greater, or there's likely to be a huge ego dilemma. One is likely to be so self-important that they think they are the sun and everything else. So we have this two-faced lens. One lens reflects into the world of spirit, one reflects into the material self. And this is something that gives astrologers a lot of weepers jeepers, because the egoism, you know, if somebody's really egoistic, they're kind of spanky about it. They've got that overconfidence of being, wow, I can do this. But the thing of it is, as ugly as their egoism is, the things that they are egoistic about are very beautiful and are very remarkable. And that's what you always encounter when you're focusing on the sun in the horoscope. You're focusing both on egoism and on the source of the being that has done remarkable things about which its lower nature has become egoistic about. The blinding light of the sun reduces that somewhat. We don't even want to look at someone who's like that. The lower nature anyway is just a counterfeit of the true self, the higher self as it's often called. That lower nature has arrogated a lot of power to itself and a lot of attention and authority and everything else, and it has become tainted with a kind of selfishness. Therefore, when we look at the sun, we can potentially see vanity and egotism and egoism and self-centeredness, showiness, power hungriness, all of those kinds of things are likely with the sun. Anytime one looks at the sun in a horoscope, one is focusing on both. The spiritual center that doesn't have any room for egoism because it gets in the way of itself. And of course, that false ego. It requires a lot of discernment, and it requires the ability to face both at the same time. So when you look at the sun in the horoscope, it is something like looking at the sun in the sky. Identity. The sun represents identity. And if you want to make keyword sentences for the sun, make a simple sentence like that. I have the sun in Scorpio, so you could put a Scorpio keyword there and say, I am nasty. But if you were more correct, you could say, I am sexy. But you just, that's the way keyword astrology works. We've been introducing words and principles all along, and you would keep putting words in until you found the one that your intuition struck home with. That's what this course here if anybody's interested in a three-year course, or if enough people are interested in a three-year course, we will do it. Looking at the number of people that have survived a one-year course, it doesn't look very likely. So, there is an indestructible union between the two faces of this lens that we call selfhood and ego. You cannot destroy ego without at the same time destroying the other face of the lens, which is self. The whole idea is to tame the ego and to have it serve the higher spiritual part rather than aggrandizing and taking things to itself. Myths of the sun. There are many, many. There have been a number of books that have been written that demonstrate that there are a huge number of myths that are solar myths. So we're going to only just talk a little bit about a few things. And when we were talking about the signs of the zodiac, we were talking about the children of Jacob as being the 12 children of Jacob, or Israel, and later becoming the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob represents that patriarchal sun figure that is the source of all of them. Jacob had two wives, and he had children by the handmaiden of each of those two wives. So in effect, he had four wives through which he had children. And that is also an astrological allegory. If the sun is represented by Jacob, the four major phases of the moon, which are clearly discernible with the naked eye, represent the four wives, and they represent successive stages of something being born or successive sources of things being crystallized. And so this is a statement then of the centrality of the sun. In Greece, there were a number of sun gods. First, there was Apollo, the golden boy. He was brilliant and he was beautiful. He was the son of Zeus, meaning to say that focus of self is the focus of the universal idea of self, which is what Jupiter as the ideational mind and source of all ideas is about. He was a seven-month child, meaning to say that it was a spiritual manifestation and it didn't require all of the stages of coming into the earth. Apollo was a twin. He was a twin to Artemis, and Artemis represented the moon. And do you know that over the average of all things, the size of the sun in the sky is exactly the same as the size of the moon in the sky? A lot of things depend on perihelion and aphelion and perigee and apogee, but on the average, they both are approximately 1/2 of a degree in space. He was the son of Leto, who was a nature nymph that represented the ether, or the source of energy that gets focused into becoming light. Apollo slays Pythias, and that's what this serpent is here on the wall. It's not completed, but it's usable. He wrestled with the great python for an entire year, meaning to say that the self, which is the sun hero, wrestled with each of the trials and tasks of each of the signs of the zodiac. And when that year was over, Apollo became Apollo Pythias, who sees all and knows all, meaning to say if you have overcome all of the different segments of the snake, you have overcome all of the spectral differentiations of the one light, then you can become the one light that focuses through everything else. Apollo plays on his harp or his lyre, and which has all of the planetary notes to it. He's always perpetually youthful. That's the nature, even in terms of the physical sun itself as a plasma, plasma imploding on itself again and again. That is the quality of the sun. The sun, as Apollo, is a god of healing and the father of all of the healers, or the saint to all of the healers, such as Aesculapius. He never marries. The sun is itself alone. It can't unite with anything less than itself. It's the interesting thing about the sun, that it's always individual, and it's so much itself that you have to be careful that, you remember we've been talking all about things and their opposites. What often happens with the sun is that the sun sometimes burns a house out. So that I've seen quite a few cases where people have the sun in the seventh house and never get married. They burn it all out. The sun is an archer, and it has beams of life, of light that it throws off. And Apollo is sort of a big show-off. I don't know if we've got time for a story. We'll tell that. I'm not in a real jocular story mood tonight, so we'll save it, maybe save it, tell it at another time. The older generation, the Titanic generation of the sun gods in Greece, was Helios. He was an elder who rode his blazing chariot across the sky every day. And it's the emblem of effulgency and the power of will. He's also overconfident. He burns things up sometimes with his character. The sun is like that. If you express yourself too strongly, you burn people out, just the way the sun burns out a house in the horoscope. Sometimes destructive, sometimes peremptory, which is an excellent word for understanding the sun. It jumps to things, skipping over many, many steps. But again, that chariot rides every day, and it's very predictable. The sun usually represents reliability. Helios is also sometimes cranky, which is the way the sun works when later in life for someone. In Norse mythology, the sun is represented by Balder, who's again the most beautiful and lovable of the gods, and again a god of eternal youth. Balder gets reborn each year and gets reborn out of a fountain of youth. So there is this same quality of rejuvenescence, the ability to come back after you've tired out and you've burned everything out is a quality of the sun. Yeah, I'll skip another story because I'm not in a story mood tonight. Planetary figures. We just said a few minutes ago that planets are like people and people are like planets. Biologically, we're like the animals. Spiritually, we're like the gods. We are creators and we are creatures at the same time. We have this horrendously divided nature. So planets then, each of them as specialists, represent special people in our lives. This is an axiom that you can take. Every important person in your life represents a planet. And every planet in your horoscope represents one or more important people. So every person in your life that is important represents at least one planet in your chart. And every planet in your chart represents at least one person that is important. And therefore, it is extremely important to look at horoscopes in terms of planetary figures, because the planets are personifications of qualities or organs of consciousness within the general, and planetary figures are consolidations of parts of your own soul. You are through your friends, or even through your enemies. Whoever is extremely important in your life is a consolidation of some part of yourself. And the people that are important in your life that you don't like are probably the most important, because they represent the aspects of your own self that need to be worked on. If there is somebody you can't stand, if you locate that person in your horoscope, you'll find probably one of your most trying aspects, a planet with something that's really difficult to deal with. So, what we want to do when we look at each planet as we're going through the planets is we want to look at it, at each planet as representing one or more people or types of people. We can't list them all, but we'll list the ones that are important. Obviously, for the sun is self. And your relationship to yourself is indicated by the disposition of your sun. My sun is involved only with an octave planet, a hidden octave planet in the eighth house. And therefore, for me, I relate to my sun as something hidden or something internal. I have the sun in the second house, which indicates that I'm greedy on my birthday. I want all those presents. But those are things we all work with. So we're talking about the divinity within. And the more you cultivate the divinity within, the more you consult yourself, though they might cringe at it, exactly as the Orthodox Christians say, what would Jesus do? If you do that with yourself, that's how you relate to the sun, or what the sun represents in your horoscope. And what the sun represents in your horoscope shows how you can become yourself. For me, I become myself or talk to myself by being a devil's advocate. That is, by being the contrary, somebody who's always opposite. Since the sun is the center of everything, there's something in your own self-being that is the source of power for everything else in your character. Other people who are indicated by the sun are agents to self-consciousness. There are people that when you're around them, you are automatically self-conscious. And that self-consciousness, if some people feel very uncomfortable to be around their solar person, makes them feel uncomfortable with themselves, because they're seeing how much they have neglected of their own being and how little they are aware of themselves. And it isn't until they're around somebody who is aware of themselves that they become self-aware. It's very, very important. So agencies to self-awareness, even if they're self-inadequacies or if they're agencies to recognizing personal vanity or anything like that. Another kind of individual that the sun represents is authority. There are some people that are in your life that just because of their being, they may not be that for everyone, they are authorities in your life. They have power in their own being to influence the way you look at things. Now, sometimes these are people who dazzle us. If you happen to have a dazzling son, that's important. Sometimes they are self-made people, because self-made people carry their authority within them and not necessarily because of any recognition in the world as one would find with the 10th house. And usually people who are authorities are people of strong character, good or bad. And sometimes these authorities are empty. We've all had straw bosses and we've all met paper tigers. Either of those could very well be a son person. Central figures, the kind of person that when that person is actively in your life, everything else is spinning around that person. I worked for a group of physicists, the majority of which were Aries people, but the central figure was a Leo figure. And when he was around, things were going. They weren't going off on the Aries thing of let me show my strength and energy. Things were central to that person, and things started to happen. And it had to have been in Aries. You wouldn't find something like that happening with a Virgo or with a Pisces or somebody like that. In some cases, vitalizers. I had a vitalizer, a person who could take craps off of my legs with magnetic healing and then give me a charge of energy. And he happened to have the sun in Scorpio, which is where my sun is. It's a literal, not necessarily a figurative, though it can be figurative, I suppose. But people who vitalize. Fathers and father figures together with Saturn. That is the person who you loved and who loved you from the very beginning, and because of that relationship of molding you and guiding you and disciplining you and doing all of those things, that person is automatically a father figure and is automatically authority whether you like it or not. If it's positive, it's someone you want to grow up to be like. If it's negative, it is someone that you do everything in your power to not be like. Of course, if you look at the sun too much, you are captured by the sun, and if you don't like that figure and continue to look at that figure, you become like that figure. Mature men. That is to say, in general, across many horoscopes, older men, not aged men, but older men, are indicated by the sun. This is especially important in a woman's chart, because in a woman's chart, the sun is not so overtly active. The moon is more overtly active in a woman's chart than it is in a man's chart, but men, mature men who bring out that self-consciousness are extremely important in a woman's chart. Do women marry their fathers? You can't say it as a general rule, but often that's the case. Mature men represent positivity. They don't just represent youthful energy that burns itself out, but they represent something that is assured, something that's been around long enough and it knows itself well enough so that it can accomplish things. That's what the sun as mature men represents. Not always, but the sun usually or often represents the strongest person in your life. And if you think of one person who stands out above all else, the one that just because of their strength of being, at least to you, causes you to identify with them, that is what the sun is. Together with Saturn again, the sun represents people who help you to to be conscientious, to be ethical, to be intuitively working toward character building. Colors. Each of the planets has a color. And the color that we're dealing with is just the simplest kind of coloration, the outer color, not on this plane or that plane in the spiritual world. You can do that, but that's carrying things a little far for what we're trying to do here. The outer color is exactly as it is in physics. This shirt is orange because orange is in abundance in it, and everything else that isn't orange is esoteric to it. It stays inside. Some of the colors for the sun, orange, or amber, or gold, or tawny, or the light tans, and sometimes even deep yellows. Sometimes browns, but you've got to be a little careful there. Now, each of the basic metals represents an epitome in the evolution of the mineral kingdom. And each of those epitomes relates to a planet, which is itself an epitome. So the primary metal for the sun is gold. And it's an everything metal. It's conductive, it's ductile, it's malleable, it's dense, it forms crystals, it's inert, meaning to say almost inert, it's self-sufficient. It's very, very rare, and it is the perfect energy transducer. Like if you make a disc-like saucer, if you know what you're doing with your meditation, you can levitate in it if it's coated with gold, because you can use it as a means for transducing energies out of the etheric planes. This is the way the Incans used to do it in ancient times. There is another metal that relates more to the lower surface of the lens of self, that is the ego, and that is chrome, the ego orientation of chrome. And even the way you go through the electrolytic process to do chrome plating is indicative of a planetary sequence, just like the planetary sequence in the heavens. Let's talk a little bit. We'll be very brief about these things, just to introduce the whole idea. Plants, trees, and foods. Among the trees and plants, laurels, which have always been associated with victory, are associated with the sun. Bay leaves are associated with the sun. The sunflower, the dandelion, and the celandine. Foods, honey, some of the citrus, and most antiseptic herbs, especially something like golden seal. And in the etheric energy states, the vital part of what we call vitamin, especially the sunshine vitamin D and the anti-scorbutic vitamin C. Now, each of the planets has a planetary emissary, which is an archangel. In the same way that we are one step above the animals and two steps above the plants and three steps above the minerals, ahead of us, one step ahead of us, are the angels, and two steps ahead of us are the archangels. And the archangels work through the desire world. And the desire world is where all of the astral or desire forces work that are the basis of astrology. Therefore, there are archangelic planetary emissaries from each of the planets that assist us in our life if we want it and if we're capable of utilizing it. And the archangel for the sun is the archangel Michael. Therefore, if you take Sunday at exactly sunrise, and if you need to solve a problem about your selfhood or how to overcome your egoism, it is important to exactly at sunrise on Sunday to be focusing on your problem and asking the help of Michael. And it will speak inside of you just as your own voice. It doesn't come into your body or anything like that. It speaks through you. There is something within your spiritual being that can resonate to other spiritual beings, almost the way a tuning fork will resonate to another tuning fork. And the same thing happens if you are pondering inwardly with Michael in mind. In anatomy and physiology, the planets have more to do with physiology than anatomy. The signs of the zodiac have more to do with anatomical structure, but the active use of astrological agencies is more like the planets. The heart is ruled by the sun as much or more as Leo is. When we say that he gave it a heartfelt try, we're talking about somebody who has done something sincerely and all out. The flexibility and the fortitude of the spine are indicated by the sun. Together with Neptune, the spinal fluid, not only the physical part of it, but the spiritual part of it. The eyes and vision are ruled by the sun, especially the right eye in a male and the left eye in a female. And the spleen as a gateway for energy coming in and a gateway for the destruction of red blood cells on the way out. If you look on the handout, you will see that there are a number of there are a number of characters or special stations of planets or special qualities. The sun is considered a benefic planet. Light is ultimately always positive. Given all things being neutral, the sun is likely to do the good thing or the right thing or to work for the positive of things. Yeah, sometimes it's seen as a variable, but it truly turns out to be a benefic. It's a good point to bring up. It's a masculine planet. It's assertive, it's outward, it's active. It is a diurnal planet, meaning of the day. It is the ultimate diurnal planet. Warm, even hot, dry, and outward. It is a dynamic planet. It's always doing something, even though it isn't an active doing the same way that the sun is doing. There is no non-doing the way Mars is active with a physical doing. There is no non-doing to the sun. It's a sustaining kind of activity. In the evolution of planets, that's not to say that there isn't something very highly holy about the planets that are called primitives. But what we're talking about in that ladder of evolution is that some things are more active in primitive qualities of our life, some things more in human or social qualities, and some things more in spiritual and transcendent qualities. The sun is a social planet tending toward spirituality. Rulership, or the special stations. The sun rules Leo, or Leo rules the sun. If you look at examples, suppose somebody has Leo in the second house, it means that a person who is self-responsible about money. If the person has Leo in the second house, and the sun is in the fifth house, they're likely to spend their money on children. Or active speculation might be a way of income with that kind of quality. If the sun rules the, if Leo rules the 10th house, it indicates somebody who's likely to be a very big social figure, and a social figure who is the center of attention of all sorts of things. If the sun happens to be in the seventh house with that combination, it means that that position may affect the marriage very clearly. Like there might be some kind of social scandal that breaks up the marriage. Or the marriage partner may be the one who leads to the dignity in society. It is that rulership is the most important of all of the stations, because a planet, it's the way the planet expresses itself indirectly. Because no matter what is happening to the in Leo, it's going to affect the sun wherever it is. And the sun wherever it is going to affect anything that's going on in Leo, and that's all important, and we'll try to bring up examples every time as they come up. The sun has its detriment in Aquarius. Because the sun likes centering, it doesn't like that diffuseness of Aquarius. That is the attenuation of the light. It gets spread out all over the place. It's uncentered. The sun has its exaltation in Aries. And in the exaltation, a special quality comes out. You can talk about all of the specific stations by looking at an animal. For example, since we're talking about the sun, let's take a solar animal. Let's take a mountain lion. If a mountain lion is on the side of a mountain, it is in its dignity because it looks like the stones in color and it can dash out and pounce on things. But it is in its detriment if it is in a place that is wet and muggy, like a swamp or something like that, because it doesn't do well in water. Its exaltation is a place where a special quality can come out. That would be like if it would be in a forest and it can leap off of the branches of a tree. That would be what exaltation is like. It wouldn't look like the tree, but it would have that leaping quality. And fall, the sun has its fall in Libra because there's just too much having to think of others and not enough of thinking about self. And that would sort of be like the mountain lion being in a place where there were no small creatures to eat. You know, that would be starved out of a place. Let's look at one other thing. That is the sun in the east. And by the sun in the east, we mean anywhere throughout the first house and halfway up into the 12th house, but especially at the ascendant. If the sun is in the east, it greatly increases vitality and recuperability. I had a friend that was an Apollo-like person and even looked like an Apollo's god statue. And he could party all night, all day and all night, and then just put his head down on a chair like this for 15 or 20 minutes, and then he would be restored. His energy would come back. He had that kind of recuperative ability. When the sun is in the east, usually it helps the body to be in greater or more perfect proportion. There's enormous stamina, endurance, and usually there's a unified direction of the whole character. It's a purposeful character, especially if the sun is right near the ascendant, because the sun represents the inner being and the ascendant represents the outer being. Then there is complete concord between the inner being and the outer being. And they're both working to the same end, and that is that undeniable purpose. Sometimes when the sun is in the east, there's problems with the eyes. sometimes it is as though there is a cataract over the eyes, even if there isn't a cataract over the eyes. I don't know how to say it. The sun in the east tends to increase the size of the body, but not always, and it is not really much. The one thing that it does seem to do, it does seem to increase the size of the chest cavity. There's more relaxation, and that relaxation is due to self-assurance and optimism. You don't find many people who are meek who have the sun in the east. If it's especially in the first house, it is a self-made person. You've heard about the self-made man who is in authority because he did it on his own. That's very often the sun in the first house. That's something you can almost bank on. It turns out that way. And the sun in the east usually tends to sustain youthfulness well into life, more than for most people. And that's all I have. Yes. Yes. Well, if you meet someone that makes you extremely self-conscious of who you are, one way it can happen is you're around someone and that person makes you, you're very much aware of how little you have done to become yourself or to be yourself. Sometimes you're around such a person and you say, wow, that's what I always wanted to be inwardly. So when you understand your essential self through that kind of person is what the sun represents.
Okay. The other thing that deals with this.
Yep.
You don't have the planet Uranus along the side.
Oh, I don't. I may have an error in there. I may have to correct that. I don't have Neptune and Uranus in there.
Neptune is transcendental. That's it.
Oh, it's, no, that's all three. That whole sector, everything above the line there. Everything above that line that says, with the slash, that says spirituals or transcendentals or octaves.
Yeah, and
Uranus. Oh, I got two Plutos and no Uranus. Okay. I'll correct it and get it next time. All right.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you very much. You have questions?